Lord, we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet, they are now standing before us on the battlefield. Srila Prabhupada gives this very insightful purport to this purport. Arjun did not know whether he should fight and risk unnecessary violence, although fighting is the duty of the Kshatriyas, or whether he should refrain and live by begging. If he did not conquer the enemy, begging would be his only means of subsistence. Nor was there certainty of victory, because either side might emerge victorious. Even if victory awaited them and their cause was justified, still, if the sons of Dhritarashtra died in battle, it would be very difficult to live in their absence. Under the circumstances, that would be another kind of defeat for them. All these considerations by Arjuna definitely prove that not only was he a great devotee of the Lord, but he was also highly enlightened and had complete control over his mind and senses. His desire to live by begging, although he was born in the royal household, is another sign of detachment. He was truly virtuous, as these qualities, combined with his faith in the words of instruction of Sri Krishna, his spiritual master, indicate. It is concluded that Arjuna was quite fit for liberation. Unless the senses are controlled, there is no chance of elevation to the platform of knowledge, and without knowledge and devotion, there is no chance of liberation. Arjuna was competent in all these attributes over and above his enormous attributes in his material relationships. So this is a very interesting situation that Arjuna has found himself in. And he is completely confused and doesn't know what he should do. He doesn't know whether he should fight or not fight. If he fights, there is uncertainty as to whether there will be victory. If I fight, what will be the outcome? Will we win or will we lose? He's even considering that if they win, and on the other party, if the other party loses, that means they basically all die. That in itself is another form of defeat, because the other party, they are all related. This particular war, which was arranged by Providence, by Krishna, ultimately. There are the 105 cousin brothers. There are the five Pandavas. On one side, 106. The five Pandavas on one side, and then there is Duryodhana and his 100 brothers on the other side. But they're all, cousin brothers. So, and of course, there are various families with their armies, and they are all coming to back either one side or another. So whichever side is victorious, they will have to live with the other side having been killed. So in that sense, it's a shallow victory, because it's almost like, then what do you enjoy knowing that thousands and thousands of those who are very dear to you have been killed for the kingdom that you inherit through that battle? How do you really enjoy that for the rest of your life? There is so much sorrow and suffering on account of such a ghastly, bloody affair as wars are. So for many various different reasons, Arjuna doesn't know what he's going to do. So this is actually the situation that we find ourselves in, all of us, everyone in the material world, through the human species, animal species, everyone. Of course, human species, their thought processes are more developed, and we have to make a decision. Should I do this, or should I not do that? Perhaps it's better if I do this. Maybe I shouldn't do that. Right? How many people have found themselves thinking like that at some stage? Yeah? At some and of course, you know, that's, we look around, and of course, the older we get, and the more entangling the material world becomes, when we have, you know, families and children and so many relatives, and we attain some positions and what have you, the choices tend to bear more and more weight as we go through life. We become more and more implicated. That when we're single, of course, and young, we seem to have life, you know, our whole life ahead of us, and okay, we make a mistake, doesn't matter, we'll just start again. But as we get to, you know, towards the prime of our life, if we make some mistake in our activities, there's going to be huge ramifications, which is going to come back on us personally, and of course everyone that's depending upon us, or everyone that may be looking up to us. So all of us will be placed in this situation. And of course, the underlying point here is that which we sometimes miss is that there is a reaction to everything we're doing. That's sometimes the point that we, the philosophical point, or the law of the way the material world is working, that we, because we're caught up in a particular circumstance, we're just trying to, similarly with Arjun, he's immersed in this consideration, and therefore he's also not considering this law of material nature, that for whatever, every action that we perform, there is a reaction, and that's the real problem. Now, we may be thinking the problem is, you know, should I put a little bit more time into my education? Should I take this job? Should I, you know, marry this person? Should I leave this person? Should I, you know, put so much effort into this? We might be thinking that's the problem. We become absorbed in the particular situation. But the real problem is that there's a reaction to everything we're doing, and that's the ultimate problem. If we solve that problem, then we'll never ever be in that situation again. See? Once we solve that problem, that there is no more reaction to my activities, we will never ever have to face that dilemma that I do not know what to do. Should I go this way or that way? Because then there is no fear of reaction. So this is the essential teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, that Arjun, like all of us, generally, because we're thinking in terms of what will satisfy us, therefore we're responsible for the reaction. The teaching of the Bhagavad Gita is that when we actually stop thinking in those terms and think in terms of what will satisfy Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then there is no longer any more reaction. It's very, very simple. So this is the Krishna in solving Arjuna's problem. He doesn't just solve one problem for Arjuna, he solves his problem eternally. And in solving Arjuna's problem, of course Arjuna is actually a liberated personality. He really doesn't have a problem. Krishna has arranged this system this situation and he's arranged for some temporary bewilderment of Arjun, so that Arjun will be put into the same situation that all of us will face for all time. And if you go down the track 5,000 years from now, 10,000 years from now, 1,000,000 years from now, you'll find that human beings will be in the same situation. Sometimes people think that, you know, perhaps you know, you have Bhagavad Gita, that is your religion, we have this, that is our religion. But they don't understand that Bhagavad Gita is dealing with the facts of life. That it doesn't matter whether you're a Hindu, a Christian, a Muslim, black, white, young or old, this problem will be there. That we will be in a situation where we're seriously considering, I don't know what to do, because, you know, the problem is there's a reaction for everything I do, and I may suffer if I do this, and I may suffer if I do that. This way I will suffer, and this way I will suffer more. You see, sometimes they have, you know, musicians who sing about that sort of dilemma. There's one song by The Clash. Should I stay or should I go? If I stay it will be trouble, if I go it will be double. You heard that one? So, a little bit of my conditioning coming out there. So, Krishna, in solving Arjuna's problem, he's actually presenting this actually for us. Arjuna really didn't have a problem. He was, this is all enacted for our benefit and for all people for all times to come. And that's the nature of God, of course, that he doesn't, whatever he does is inconceivably wonderful, and he's very, very expert. Just like there was one lady who she used to carry bundles of sticks on her back, and then she would sell them for firewood. So all day she would gather it and just put it on her back. And one day she dropped all those sticks, and she was lamenting that life was so difficult and what have you. And she began to pray to God, and so the Lord actually appeared before her. And he said, yes, you know, you prayed, how can I help you? And she said, yes, can you put these sticks back on my back? So God doesn't work in that way, that he just loads us up with the same burden. He works in a way as to always try and if we had that opportunity. For instance, if you go to a millionaire, multi-millionaire, and he says, look, you know, you've helped me, we have a nice relationship, I'll give you a gift. And you ask, oh yes, can I have $5? You know, he wouldn't just give you $5, he'd probably give you, you know, $100,000 or something. It wouldn't mean much anything to him like that. So this is the way Krishna works. So, this is the underlying teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, that if we learn to act in such a way to satisfy the Supreme Lord, then there is no reaction for our activities. And again, sometimes what people try to do to solve their problem, instead of taking that principle, is that they try and give up a certain activity. So here, Arjun, he is thinking, I'll give up fighting. All right? So he's thinking, the problem is that I'm performing a particular activity of fighting, therefore I'll not fight, and then all my problems will be solved. But it doesn't work like that, because the very nature of the material world is that things, situations are forced upon us, whether we like it or not. Even if Arjun decides not to fight, that doesn't mean the fight will not be there. the other side will just come in and they will fight anyway. And of course Arjuna, if he sees his, you know, those people who are very, very dear to him being slaughtered, is very doubtful that he will be able to, you know, as a Kshatriya, to just not fight. And he will fight anyway, one way or another. Just like, you know, there are many, most decisions like that, we don't have a choice. It's the nature of the material world that forces us to act in a particular way. We're acting because we're a spirit soul. The nature of a spirit soul is to be active. But because we're in this body, we're active in the material body, in a material way. But we must act because the spirit soul is always active. And we must have desires because the spirit soul is always desirous, always conscious. So we cannot, because we're a living spiritual entity, we cannot just become like a dead stone. None of us here can just say, I'll just live my life like a dead stone, because we're not dead stones. We're living, eternal living entities with desires, spiritual desires, but temporarily covered by material consciousness, and spiritual activities which are temporarily covered by material activities. So Arjuna is thinking, I'll stop fighting, but that's there's no real question that that's going to be possible. In the same way, you know, sometimes we have the choice that, you know, we have the call of nature, and we think, oh, I just won't answer the call of nature. It's just not going to happen. It's like you're going to be forced to answer the call of nature, and if you don't answer the call of nature, there'll still be repercussions. You know, it's just artificial. We might say, you know, I am working, 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 and because I am working, it is causing me so many problems. But we are forced to work. We are forced to work. If we do not work, then we cannot eat. So we must work. So there's no question of giving up work. There's no question of giving up fighting. We cannot actually give up anything. What Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita is that everything should be utilized properly. And Krishna actually doesn't say give up anything, really. Just the false sense of the false sense that we are the doer and the enjoyer of our activities. Krishna is asking us to give up that false concept that we are the material body, completely independent. Certainly, Krishna asks us to give up our foolishness, but he doesn't ask us to give up things which are natural to the spirit soul. And therefore, you see throughout the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, whatever you do, do that as an offering to me. That he's not saying, you know, give up this, give up this, give up that. That's not the emphasis of Bhagavad Gita. Rather, you see throughout the Bhagavad Gita, he's saying, do this, do this, do this, do that. But whatever you're doing, if you can't do this, do that. If you can't do that, do this. That's Krishna's. But whatever you're doing, do that for me, and then there'll be no reaction. So sometimes the activities that we perform in this world they may just like Arjuna, he may be thinking that fighting is abominable, a terrible, terrible action, so therefore there's good reason for me to give that up. But actually, when anything is done for Krishna, there is no question of it being bad. When anything is done for Krishna, it is all good. The fact that we are all sitting here in this world today with some relative peace is because the enormous armies and power warlords that existed on this planet 5,000 years ago were all killed. Major, major demoniac personalities. We sometimes think of we have our Adolf Hitlers and what have you, and we know how much disturbance that such demoniac people can cause. They are very, very powerful. They have huge armies. So Adolf Hitler, you know, one demon, and they gather up the forces of other demoniac people. And just like Ravana, nothing has changed. If you go back millions of years to Lord Ram, Ravana, the same mentality, that he is also thinking that I'm not going to do everything on behalf of Rama. I'm going to do everything on my behalf. And here is Ram, he has Sita. Of course, Sita is an expansion of Lakshmi. And Lakshmi, she benedicts the world with opulence and wealth and beauty like this. So Ram, naturally, he is attracted that I should have Lakshmi. I should have Sita and I should be the enjoyer. Not God, not Ram. Which is very, you know, this is the same mentality as Adolf Hitler and all these different personalities. Whatever opulence and whatever is wonderful in this world, it is not meant for God. It is not meant for God's devotees. It is meant for me. That is a demoniac mentality. Demon doesn't mean two horns and a tail and what have you. It just means this mentality. So, you know, some demoniac people are actually very, very attractive looking, very handsome, and they're actually very charming. But we see recently they had the underbelly murders previously, from about 1995 to 2005. And one of the players in that, I forget his name, but you know, he was responsible for so many murders. But if you see his face, he's got this charming face, always this cute little smile. And the thing that bewildered everyone is he is the last person that you would expect to be this monster. But obviously very demoniac, that stop at nothing, I shall enjoy, like that. So that's the demoniac mentality. So 5,000 years ago, when Krishna was on the planet, the force of these demoniac personalities was immense, thousands of times more fearful, more ominous, more powerful than what we face with personalities such as Hitler. But Krishna's mission was to eradicate them from the face of the earth. But generally Krishna, he likes to give the credit to his devotees. So he actually wanted Arjuna and Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, he wanted them to take the credit. So although Krishna was actually the Supreme Lord and he orchestrated in the form of time, these people were all killed even before the battle. They were all dead. None of them were going to go home. It was already destined by Krishna in the form of time. But he wanted Arjuna and the Pandavas to take that credit. So he allowed them to. So that is the reciprocation between Krishna, the Lord, and his devotees. The Lord is such a lover of his devotees, he is always trying to glorify them and always making opportunities to make his devotees glorious, and the devotees are always trying to glorify the Lord, and they're not accepting any, you know, they will not accept any praise or recognition. Whatever good happens, if something happens wonderful in the life of a devotee, they immediately say that is Krishna's mercy. And there is something bad in their life, they immediately think this is the result of my sinful activities and my decrepit nature. That's how a devotee thinks. But if you ask the non-devotees, whatever good happens, even if they haven't really been taken part in it, somehow they'll get, yes, that was obviously due to my brilliance and expertise, that's how that happened. That's why, if there's something wonderful happening, it is because of me, like that. And if something bad happens, even if they're directly responsible. No, it wasn't me. It was like that when I got here. Yeah. So here, Krishna has, you know, he has cleared the way for us to live in some relative peace. Therefore, for Arjuna to fight on behalf of Krishna, we are still reaping the benefits. Everyone on this planet, who, you know, literally within the universe, who has some degree of peace, it is because of all the terrible personalities and armies that were destroyed many thousands of years ago. So, and therefore, instead of you sitting here today you're able to sit here and hear the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, you would not. That would be, you would not have that opportunity. Demoniac people would make sure that opportunity never arose. And as we sit here freely today, to hear that is directly as a result of that battle of Kurukshetra. Had the demons won, you would never hear this song of God. And instead of being told to work for the benefit of the Supreme Lord so that you become completely free from all your problems, you'd be told, if you want to become free from your problem, which is me, what I'm going to do to you, if you don't work for me, you work harder. That's what the demons would be saying. You work harder for me, you make more money for me. And if you don't, you think that's a problem, you wait and see what happens if you don't do that. That's what we'd be saying. So, whatever activities someone does on behalf of Krishna, it is all good. It is all good. And there is no reaction to those activities. And therefore, we see the gopis of Vrindavan. They're actually glorified as the greatest lovers. The greatest servants of Lord Sri Krishna is the gopis of Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who actually began the Hare Krishna movement, again, kick-started 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an incarnation, the very self-same, the full manifestation of Krishna. But instead of coming as Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his original feature like that, he came in the form, his eternal form as a devotee, the worshipper, the lover of God. So as God, he is all things to all people, and he gets to experience every side of life. So he appeared as his own devotee, and he taught the principles of Bhagavad Gita, and he said that here in the Bhagavad Gita we're taught how to serve the Supreme Lord so as to become disentangled from the material world, but more than that, so that we can actually become lovers of God. And on that platform, the greatest lovers of God, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared to be the gopis, because they show that no matter how abominable an activity may appear to be, they had full faith that if something is dedicated to the Supreme Lord, it is always auspicious and completely without reaction. So therefore, we see that in order to show the highest level of love of God, Krishna arranged a circumstances whereby the gopis, he called them in the dead of night. He played his flutes. Now, many of those gopis were actually married, but they understood that when Krishna was calling, that they immediately dropped everything and they went running to Krishna. Now, in the context of Vedic society, we can hardly imagine the risk that they took, because in Vedic society in full swing, a woman never, you know, went out unaccompanied. especially at midnight. Especially into the forest, and especially with Krishna. But they, you know, the gopis, when they heard Krishna's flute and they understood that Krishna is calling us to dance, they just left everything. And they were so eager, enthusiastic. They weren't thinking, will I, won't I don't know what I should do, what sort of reaction will I get, you know, will this be good for me or good for them? No, it was good for Krishna, and that was good enough. And therefore, some of them raced out the house, hadn't even dressed properly. Some of them had the top part, you know, on the bottom, and the bottom part of their clothes on the top, and their, you know, their makeup was sort of on half of the face. They were just delirious. If Krishna is calling us for service, let us immediately go. Now, of course, this is the gopis were showing by that demonstration the topmost. And of course, Krishna then danced with those gopis for the entire duration of one night of Brahma. And when the gopis went home, of course, everything, by Krishna's mystical arrangement, everything was cleared up, everything was fine. There was no real ramifications. But the gopis, of course, are Krishna's eternal pleasure potency. They're Krishna's own spiritual energy. All the gopis are expansions of Krishna's own internal spiritual pleasure potencies. They're not ordinary persons. So, you know, Krishna wasn't actually dancing with others' wives, or these gopis were his eternal, own pure spiritual energy. So there is no blemish on Krishna nor the gopis. But for our understanding, so that we could appreciate a demonstration of how a devotee will give up everything on the highest platform, this circumstance was arranged for that, so that we could understand that. So, in this way, if we take up this message of the Bhagavad Gita, then this human form of life will be properly fulfilled. Here we have discussed some, you know, very nice instructions from Krishna, how Arjuna's dilemma was solved, how that same dilemma of all living entities, all humans, for all time can be solved by understanding that the real problem is to become free from material reaction. And in order to do that, we must dedicate our activities to Krishna. But if we can learn to do that with love, that is better. That is better to approach God, just, you free me from my sinful reactions. That's like going to a millionaire and asking for $5. If you have the opportunity to serve Krishna automatically, without asking, all karma, there's no karma attached to devotional service, bhakti. Automatic. You don't have to ask for that. You don't actually have to stand before the deities and pray, you please, you know, protect me from sinful reactions. Because the fact that you're standing before the deities eradicates lifetimes, many lifetimes of karmic reactions. To chant the name of Krishna. So we don't have to separately pray for that. But if we're going to spend some time and approach the Lord, ask that our hearts become so pure that we become finished with all the greed and envy and lust of this world. Let that go flying away from our heart like birds flying out of a tree. And instead, pray to the Lord that that pure love for the Supreme Lord may able to be reside in our heart. That is our only prayer that we should offer. If we do that, our human life and all the many, many millions of lives that we've had have finally reached perfection. And until we actually come to that point, we will actually wander in this material world, up and down, up and down, up and down, like that. And if that can be a long time. Most of us have probably been in the material world since the very beginning of material creation. We can just imagine how many different species of life we have been through. Up and down, sometimes in the higher planetary systems, sometimes the lower planetary systems. Sometimes bugs, germs, dogs, camels, acids, everything. We've been like that. Since the dawn of creation, just try and imagine how many different bodies we've had. And if we don't, now that we have a human form, which is very rare, very rare, if we don't utilize it and we go back into that cycle, we could be here to the end of the universal creation. And at the end of the universal creation, if we still haven't come to that point of love of God, then when Mahavishnu winds up the whole material creation within his body as he inhales, then we will remain within the form of Mahavishnu for trillions and trillions and trillions of years until the next creation, when Mahavishnu again breathes out and sets forth the process of creation. So, coming so close, don't miss that opportunity. Take the message of Bhagavad Gita very seriously. So thank you very much for hearing. And if anyone has any quick questions before Prasada. How does one know one's duty? from Krishna or his representative. We have two types of duties. We have described in the Bhagavad Gita our material duties, which we should all execute very diligently if we're not liberated. We also have a spiritual duty, and that spiritual duty is our duty to God. Generally, for instance, most of us understand if we're in a family situation that we have a duty to our children, we have a duty to our wife, we have a duty to our mother and father. We're in this country, we know we have a duty towards the government, we have a duty to our neighbours, we have a duty towards the police department, the tax department. Every one of us generally honours all our duties. But we're leaving out someone. We're leaving out the Supreme Lord. Generally people don't think, we don't have a duty, that I've paid my taxes, that's where my duty finishes. You imagine if someone thought that, my duty stops in my family, and they don't pay their taxes, they don't pay their water bills, they don't pay, they have duties, responsibilities outside of that. So, we have a duty or a responsibility towards the planet. And after decades of abusing the planet, we're realizing we actually have a duty to look after the planet. We can't just shut our eyes and say, we don't have a duty to the planet. Let it rot. Let it fall to pieces. The problem is, we're living here. So, similarly, we may shut our eyes for millions and millions of lifetimes and say, I don't have a duty to God. But factually, we do. So we have a spiritual duty, and that is service to God. And that is to love God. And we also, while we're in this world, we have our duties on the material platform, so we should execute both. But ultimately, when we become a lover of God, all our duties on the material platform are no longer obligated to them, and whatever duties and responsibilities we have are automatically carried out by the grace of the Supreme Lord. So really our prime duty is towards the Supreme Lord. And if we fulfill that duty, all other duties and responsibilities are automatically carried out, and nothing is neglected. In the same way that if you water the root of a tree, all the leaves, all the branches, all the twigs, everything is perfectly satisfied. Any other questions or comments? So I thank you very much for your attention, and please enjoy Krishna Prasadam upstairs, and please read the Bhagavad Gita, and don't forget we have some wonderful festivals coming up: Balaram's Appearance Day, Janmashtami. So there are notice boards out there, show you all the dates. Thank you. Hare Krishna.